This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, this is John Pesutto, Victoria's opposition leader. You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
Indeed you are. This is Macca, and I'm joined in the studio by my co-host this week, Isaac. And Isaac, do you want to introduce our guest? Because we've actually got a guest in the studio.
Absolutely.
And on the phone. This is technology run completely mad.
Absolutely. So we have Melanie Duncan in the studio. She's the VP of Professional Development at ASANA, International Education Association. And on the line, we have Molina Astana. She's the first South Asian woman to be elected president of the Law Institute of Victoria. And also, she's the founder of Multicultural Women in Sport and co-founder of the Asian Australian Alliance.
That's fascinating. So welcome. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I might start off, the federal government during COVID increased the number of hours that an international student could work. And as of the 1st of July this year, they've cut it back to
48 hours
per fortnight. Previously,
It was 20 hours per week, so 40 hours per fortnight.
Okay, so, but during COVID...
During COVID last year, the government completely removed the restrictions, so international students were allowed to work unlimited hours whenever they want to during COVID last
okay.
year. It was only until the beginning of this month that they reinstated the 48 hours per fortnight limit.
Except
for students working in aged care, they can work unlimited hours until the 31st of December 2023.
Oh, and then they're going to get chopped off at the knees again.
Yeah, they unfortunately are.
So, what do you... I might ask, who'd like to lead off?
I can lead off. I'm happy with that. Morning, everybody. It was such an interesting time because student visas have always been... promoted as you are here to study. So any government messaging that had come out prior to COVID was actually we've got a balanced view for you. We like you to work in Australia, gain experience, etc. But you also need to be succeeding in your studies. So there was always a balance of okay, 40. It started off as 20 hours per week. It then changed to 40 hours per fortnight to give the students some flexibility. And then all of a sudden, without any consultation with the sector, the government decided that it was unlimited work right. rights for the students. And it was actually a shock to anyone working with the students because we'd had many conversations, hundreds of conversations over the years about, well, you know, the balance is there to ensure you succeed in your studies. And now the balance is not there. And students were feeling great pressure to earn. They had the opportunity for the first time to work unlimited work rights. Families at home were saying, oh, this is fantastic. You know, we can get ahead. We've invested a lot of money in your studies. So, you know, this will be a great opportunity for you to work more, pay back some of your debts, et cetera. But, you know, people who worked in the industry were very worried about the students then compromising their studies to work these unlimited hours. So I think now the increased time to 48 hours a fortnight is probably a really good balance that's been struck. But certainly in our world, we weren't 100% in favour of unlimited work rights for our students.
And can I ask, you know, Melina,
yep.
A lot of international students are doing law degrees in Australia, and your particular, you know, one of your particular interests is the law.
Yep.
The amount of consultation around this, so there was none when it was changed from 40 hours a fortnight to basically as many as you want, and now it's 48, so from 40 to 48, okay. But what consultation has there been, you know, with students, with the institutions? Has there been any?
Not that I'm aware of. We work with student groups. I have good relationship with the universities, but I haven't really seen much consultation happening in this area. It was just both decisions have been arbitrary because we had skills shortage during the pandemic, and the students provided those skills shortage.
Mm.
This became evident, and during the pandemic, international students were mostly the ones working with essential jobs and services, because citizens and permanent residents could receive JobKeeper allowance, and they couldn't. They weren't eligible for that. So obviously, at that point of time, it was considered that would be a great idea to have cover these skills shortages by having international students work, without really understanding the consequences of that on impact, how that will impact their study, or how it will impact their future. But again, arbitrarily, they've been moved back to that, to a limit, which is, 48 hours. Not quite sure what the reason for 48 hours is. Why is that an optimum, time limit for working? Because contrary to Melanie's view, I think that there is... students should have some flexibility in terms of the hours that they work, because many of them actually work long hours in any case to make ends meet, because they come with just a lot of them, from the understanding that I have, is that they come with fees for one semester and they intend to earn the rest. They need to work longer hours. The cost of living is really going up. There's serious hardship that may be caused to students. So limiting that to only 48 hours unnecessarily creates a real tension, and it does lead sometimes to discrimination against workers that are on temporary visas, including student visas. So I think there is that balance. I'm not quite sure it's been considered or got right. I feel that a lot of students that I've spoken to and I've heard from are struggling with that, restricted hours now.
I think Melanie has a view on this as well. Melanie?
Yeah, I think what's often overlooked in this conversation is the beginning of the process.
Yeah.
So when students apply for a student visa, they have to provide really robust financial statements to the Department of Home Affairs for their visa to be approved. So what they're actually saying when they apply for their visa is, I actually have the money to come to Australia and study for whatever my course duration is. In practice, it doesn't work like that. They get caught out by any increase in cost of living. They often get sold a message, you can get to Australia, you'll pick up heaps of work at $50 an hour. And so they come with... And it's been, from my experience, a 25-year conversation that I know of, is how do you set those expectations correctly for the students who do come here? So I think a balance, when I was using the word balance, is there's a bit of a recognition the 40 hours may be out of step with what the cost of living is. But the students have signed up at the beginning of their studies to actually say, I do have the money to come to Australia. And the financial statements vary depending on where the students are coming from. Yeah, there's a whole regime of that.
Yeah. We're going to go to a break in a second, but Isaac, as an international student yourself, that reality of, yes, okay, I've got to establish, I've got the money to do this, this is how the course is going to be paid for, this is what I'm going to live on. Did you then have to make those decisions, once you were approved, then say, well, actually, I'm going to have to supplement that income? And how did you get the balance between the working hours and the study hours? When I went to uni, that was a long time ago. They sort of just opened. but that balance was pretty difficult. So for you, how did you... Did you make that calculation, and then did you have to work, and how did you make it work?
Yeah, so fortunately my family was good enough to support me without me having to work to support myself. So it was a very fortunate situation that I was in, but I knew people that had to work hours and hours just to get past the day, just to put food on the table. So the limit on the working hours, it's quite questionable. Like, it depends on what the government see international students as. Do they see them as like a temporary solutions to a shortage in like a specific industry, or how do they see the international students? I think is the question.
I want you to hold that thought, because when we come back, I'm interested in exploring that with Milena and Melanie, as you know, what value does the federal government put on international students? There are many factors to this. So stay with us. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Isaac, and we're talking about international students and the amount they can work and how they get the balance. Stay with us.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
Queer as Foxtrot is an LGBTQI plus social group in Fitzroy and Footscray running weekly dance classes. Join beginner and intermediate group classes or private lessons in ballroom and Latin dance. Social nights are also held, or get involved for wedding prep and choreography. You don't need any experience or even a partner to attend, and classes are all casual, so you can just turn up. More info from queerasfoxtrot.com.au. Joy sponsor.
Low Res, Melbourne's only male voice pop choir, is back in Foster, South Gippsland, for one night only, Saturday, July 22nd. This year, we are singing songs from your fave pop divas, from Madonna to Mercury to the Eurythmics, and a lot more. We are thrilled to be joined by three local choirs. Bring your friends for a great night out. It's all happening Saturday, July 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Foster Memorial Arts Centre. Ticket links on the Facebook page, Low Res, Melbourne Male Choir. Enjoy community service message.
Hi, this is Dan Andrews, and you're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
Indeed you are. I'm Macca. My co-host is Isaac. Go for it.
Hello, everyone. So the question I have for Melanie and Melina is, how do international students balance their studies and their need to work to just get on with their day kind of stuff?
Balance is a key thing, actually, and it frames a lot of the conversations, particularly our association members have with the students on a day-to-day. I guess the messaging that's sort of been clear all the way along is, yes, you know, if you do work your additional hours and you are compromising your studies, what is often unknown is if an international student fails their subject, 1, 2, 3, or 4, they then need to pay for those subjects again. So if they're paying $2,000 to $3,000 a subject, all of those additional hours can actually end up being for nothing for them and put additional pressure on them. Not only do they have to pay for them again, they also have to study them again. And the student visa framework is actually all built around students completing their studies on time. And so if an international student does fail any subjects along the way, they then need a visa extension at the end, which has to be approved by the Department of Home Affairs, and it needs to be legitimately justified by the education provider as to why they're allowing this extension. And the phraseology is, you can only extend a student visa if there's compassionate and compelling circumstances, and working more than what you're allowed to work under your student visa conditions isn't an allowable reason for a visa extension. So it becomes a very difficult conversation for the student and for the education provider. So my view is, actually, I think a balance is just very important for lots of reasons.
Yeah. Now, Melina, I know that you came to Australia to study your master's in law. Did you work any part-time jobs on the side? How did you support yourself when you were here?
So I was lucky enough because I came here because I got married, and then I did my master's of law. I didn't come on an international visa. I came on a spouse visa. So I didn't have restrictions, and I wasn't wanting for much, but I was still working. I was working as a sort of a paralegal in a large law firm, which I was lucky enough to get that job through my contacts. But I know a lot of people who didn't have the same luxury and had to balance work and study. Some of them were lucky enough for their parents or someone relative supporting them. Others were not so lucky, so they had to. I know younger women working in warehouses all night someone working at McDonald's being held up by a gun. So there have been instances that I know they've worked, put themselves in, you know, dangerous, precarious situations because they had to work. So it is, it can be different for different people. So I think what Melanie spoke about, the balance, is really important. But I also think that it is, it depends on what you're doing. Some of them are more onerous than others. Mm. A law degree, I understand, is obviously very onerous. So I would expect students to put in more time in their degree rather than trying to go and trying to find work that will take them away from, achieving what they have come to achieve here. Whereas there's others that don't require that kind of, you know, diligence or hard work or, you know, a number of hours. In that case, there should be some flexibility for those students to be able to work longer. And you would usually find that if people, the students who come for these kind of degrees like medicine or law and others, usually come from, sound financial backgrounds. So they probably can afford to put in time for that, and they know that they have to put in more time and effort for their degree, so they work less. But there's others that come maybe for migration, there's courses that don't require that much effort. They sometimes come from slightly low socioeconomic backgrounds. I'm not saying that's always the case, but that may be the case, and therefore they do require that kind of extra hours to be able to work, and they also actually, their degree is not onerous. So I think that flexibility would really help students themselves. There should be some kind of guidelines on how that flexibility can be achieved, which we don't have right now. It's just a, you know, one size fits all solution, which I don't think works for anyone.
It seems strange to me. The federal government and state governments have talked endlessly about the value of international students, right? This is our biggest export industry, you know, other than stuff we dig up. So it's so important. The federal government basically gave no help to the sector during COVID. We then say, okay, you come here as a student, you're going to pay fees for the course, and you can work this number of hours. But before that, you've had to provide some evidence of a plan that you've got the money. Then when you get here and you need to work, the missing part here is the federal government, and to a great extent some state governments, seem quite happy for students to work for $10 an hour, right, in the shadow economy. So we have all this regulation about who can come, what you can do, what you can study, what's accepted. But when you're here, will actually allow you to be exploited so that you can live and study. I don't understand why there is this disconnect. So I'm going to ask you, Melanie, am I on the right track there, or am I barking up the wrong tree?
Before that, I want to say, like someone might say, like, it's time to pack up your bags and go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Who, me?
Someone.
Someone
from the previous government.
Someone who might have been the Prime Minister.
Well, they might, but, you know, and they did. But, yeah. Melanie...
There's a lot of mixed messages, Macca, I think, in this space, and there always has been. But what has... If the government was sitting here, they would say they've invested in the Fair Work Ombudsman to protect international students. So there's actually...
But do people know about that? Do the students even know about that?
They should, yeah. Melina, because it's actually in the legislation that the education providers need to provide this information. Whether they do, I'm not sure. But I did have a stat here, actually, that I was reading before I came on air, that there had been 126 litigations through the Fair Work Ombudsman over the last 5 years, and $13.4 million have been paid back to students because they've been underpaid.
So
there's an attempt, I think, whether or not it's successful, I'm not 100% sure, but it's just been this mixed messaging. Students have felt like, and every year there's an article comes out about feeling like cash cows. And when Macca was talking then, he talked about the export dollars.
Yeah.
Every article leads with export dollars.
Yeah.
That international education
don't
brings.
Worry about the people. Don't
Which,
worry about
to
the
me,
exploitation.
People who know me well know that I just say, do we have to lead with that statement?
Yep.
Because we don't want the students to feel like cash cows, but we lead with the dollars, you know. So there's always a lot of mixed messaging in this space.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think it is a feeling that international students, there is that sentiment that international students are used as cash cows, and we know that's a right. And we know that our biggest export is education. So why have double standards for international students and domestic students? Domestic students don't have any restrictions. How are they managing their study and their and work? They're still doing the same thing. So I'm not sure where why we restrict, but they get no benefits either. So there's a double whammy. Firstly, you don't get the rights, you don't get the benefits, and yet they are the largest income source for the nation. So really, it does seem strange that the government would have all these restrictions but not provide any benefits.
I think that's a very important actually point, Melina. And I'm a great advocate. I was talking off air about the fact, my personal experience, I had to balance working with university life, and a full-time course is pretty intensive. But why isn't there a domestic restriction? Why is it just international, Mel? And if there is one rule, why shouldn't it be applied to all students, irrespective of whether they're international or domestic?
I think the answer to that, and this is just my interpretation, I think the answer to that is the student visa is set up as a genuine, students have to prove their genuine temporary entrance to Australia. They put in a personal statement to say, this is why I'm choosing this course, this is why I'm coming. And so I think the benefits aren't the same because they're viewed by the government as temporary residents of Australia. So they're not citizens and they're not New Zealand citizens, you know. So I think that would be the messaging that sits behind that.
Can I just add that I have sort of, this is what I've heard, is that migration agents have attributed the scale of interest to unlimited working hours and job opportunities available to students in India as the reason for why there has been a lot of more student applications, at least
Absolutely.
From India, in the last 6 months.
Yep.
So obviously that messaging somewhere is different, because the students who are coming in are actually believing that they have these hours, because they were relaxed during the pandemic as well, that they have really good opportunities, job opportunities here as students, they will be able to support themselves. So I don't know whether the students believe that when they come here, the messaging is right, that, well, you're putting in an application saying you've got enough money, so you coming, but then why are they actually coming is not the same reason what is being attributed. So
true. A lot of those visas are being refused, but Melina, so there's a huge, highest number of student visa applications ever, but they're actually the highest visa refusal rate ever as well. So it's an interesting space at the moment.
Oh, we're running out of time.
I got
a last question, is that why is it so important that international students come to Australia? What value do they bring to the Australian people?
Oh, well, my personal view, which is based on professional experience, is they just bring such a diversity and enrichment to our campuses and communities. The fact that you've got the international students on campus just opens up your thinking. It opens up the domestic students' thinking to what cultures exist, et cetera. So you've also got, obviously, your diverse Australian students as well at the same time. So when you put them all together, it's a wonderful vibe to be around.
I agree with Melanie. I think the diversity and the rich cultural heritages that they come from really adds to our own tapestry of migration and culture here. So I think Australia is based on migration. Whether they come as international students or they come as refugees or they come as skilled migrants, it's just that they add so much to the economy of the nation, to the culture of the nation. It's so vibrant because of them. So also it brings, I always believe that diversity brings innovation. So because of the diversity that we have through the international students, there's a lot of innovation that we see. Otherwise, we've been quite insular because we are so far away from the rest of the world. Having the world come to us, closer to us, really adds to us, in growing as a nation.
Look, I want to thank both Melanie and Melina for this. And what I'd actually like the government to actually factor into this is not just the ability of the students to live and work. Let's actually put a value, and I'm not talking about the export dollars, let's actually put a value on when those students come to study in Australia and they go back to the country that they've come to Australia from, think about the value that their experience in Australia gives them. So let's actually treat them well. Mm. Let's give them the opportunity to study and work and to engage and perhaps not put a value, but recognise that these students become ambassadors for Australia. Penny Wong might have a view on that.
Probably if you read the preamble of the legislation that frames all of this, it very much talks about that.
Yeah.
It actually talks about that's the intent of the program and the soft diplomatic skills that go back to their home country. Yeah.
So thank you, Melanie and Malene. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Isaac, for choosing this subject to talk about. You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. When we come back, we're going to speak with Adam Fletcher. Adam is part of the Indigenous Banking team at NAB, and we spoke to him a few months ago, and I want an update.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.